What's happening, everyone? It's Kira and Ben back after a very long break. I'm so sorry. It has been personally all me. I've been incredibly sick. As you know, Ben and I both work retail, so when a sickness runs through the store, it kind of just runs through it. And I was its latest casualty. So thank you guys for your patience. We are going to dive back into Oscar movies. I know the Oscars have already happened. I hope everyone watched. They were amazing. Ben, did you watch?
No, I had to work.
Oh, I mean, classic. I had to work too, but I did record them. Okay, so today is going to be the holdovers. Ben, tell me now. I know I saw this movie in theaters. I was incredibly excited for it. But tell me your history with it.
So I knew nothing about this movie. What it was Mike from Trader Joe's said, "Have you seen the holdovers? It's an amazing movie." And I said, "Yeah, no, I haven't." He goes, "Well, you gotta see it." So I ended up watching it, and he was right. It was awesome.
It was awesome. Paul Giamatti, Divine Joy Randolph, and Dominic Sessa, really, they are the main hearts of this movie. I will say, I do think Divine Joy Randolph is the full heart of this movie. Her performance, as you guys know, she has won Best Supporting Actress for every award that she was nominated for. She had a clean award season sweep.
Yeah, her performance was amazing. Like, I watched the movie, and I was watching it, and when her scenes come up and she was talking about the death of her son. If you haven't seen it, her son dies and he goes to the school that they're at, but he was in the war and or military, and he ends up dying. And there's a scene where she breaks down, and like, I was like tearing up. I'm like, oh my God, I totally understand.
Oh my God. And that was so crazy. I was like, to portray this level of like hurt and like realism, I thought was insane. So I saw the movie with both my mom and my dad, and we were talking after. And I was like, and my mom asked me the question. She goes, do you think she really lost a child? Because you can't just imagine that sort of pain. And I said, I have no idea, but I think she's a great actress.
Yeah, I don't know nothing about her personal life, and anything like that's tragic. So, but her performance made you think that, good God, it seemed like it actually really happened to her. So, she had me hooked. I'm sold on her.
She knocked it out of the park. I feel like everyone actually honestly knocked it out of the park. Paul Giamatti had been nominated in everything. He did win the Golden Globe, but I thought his performance, again, was amazing. I know you didn't watch the Oscars. I did. So for those of you who also did not watch the Oscars, the way that they presented Best Supporting and Best Actor and Actress this year was they had five other winners present and do the little speeches for the new nominees. And Nick Cage did Paul Giamatti's, and he was talking about the methods of acting. And Paul Giamatti has a lazy eye in this film, and he actually wore a glass eye throughout like all of filming. He put like a glass like film over his eye, and he ended up started going like a little blind.
Oh, that's awful. I mean, you got to give everything for your
role.
Yeah, your role, but good God, not losing an eye.
I know. Well, his eyesight's back, but I thought that was funny. And I think if we look in like relation to like how praised his performances, and then Bradley Cooper, who was also nominated for Best Actor for Maestro, he really put his all into it, and he kind of got no recognition. So I think I just think it's really funny how people will latch onto certain performances, and people will elevate certain performances and bring them up. But let's talk about the film. I can just talk about the acting forever, but let's talk about the film. So it is set in an all-boys boarding school right outside of Boston.
Yes, it's right outside of Boston.
Yeah. So to me, it kind of gave me like Phillips Exeter vibes, like very like elite boys academy. And it follows Paul Giamatti, who's like the kind of grumpy, hard-ass teacher that no one really likes. The teachers don't really like him. The students kind of don't like him. He's kind of just like grumpy and smelly, but a great teacher, full of knowledge, and he really is passionate, and he really does care about the kids. And I think this really comes through slowly throughout the film, through his forged friendship with Angus and Mary, Devane Joy Randall. And then, of course, our main character is actually a young child, Angus. He is the person that plays him is Dominic Sessa. He is, I think, like only 18 or 19 years old. And I think he actually went to the school and then just went to the open casting.
Oh, that's awesome. Because that was he did a really good job.
He did a really good job. And for it to be like his first kind of film, kind of unknown coming into this, I thought was really cool. So I really liked their relationship. This movie is very funny, But at the same points, I find incredibly touching and very sad.
Yeah, there's one point where he says to a student, the student says to him, I can't afford to, you know, fail this class. And he goes, oh, don't sell yourself short. You can fail
you
this class.
You can't fail. And, like, the little lines that Paul Giamatti had was so funny. Like, when he's talking to the headmaster, and he goes, you know, I was your teacher. I've known you for a long time, so I can accurately say that you're a dick. Like, I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, yeah. There's some parts in this where I was just, like, chuckling. I thought this was great.
The writing was great, and there's a little controversy that came out right before the Oscars, so we're going to talk about that, too, but let's get more into the story. So the holdovers happens because, obviously, sometimes all the boys don't get picked up for spring break, not spring break, winter break. And Paul Giamatti is the teacher that has to hang out with them during this time. So he doesn't get to spend time, but it's kind of implied that he also doesn't have any family. So it's like, what else would he be doing? Which I kind of think is like a shitty way to look at it.
Yeah. And isn't it because he's being punished too? Like,
yeah, because they don't like him and they're like, oh, yeah, you can do this. And he doesn't have good relationships with the other people besides the two other main characters. So then Angus, Dominic Sessa, he is kind of going through something. We don't really know what it is. We see him looking at a photo longingly of like his mom and his dad. And we know that his mom just got remarried and like her new husband and doesn't really want him around. So they don't pick him up. He thinks that they're going to come pick him up and they don't. It's kind of like, that part was actually sad when he's on the phone call with them and she's like, oh, we're not coming. That broke my heart.
Yeah. You know, it's like you're supposed to put your kids first. And in this, the lady doesn't do that. And like a lot of parents, I guess, don't do that, but you're supposed to.
But you're supposed to do that, right? And I guess so then he's left behind and then he's left behind with a bunch of other kids. And then one of the kids' parents is like, hey, I'm going to pick you guys all up and we're going to go skiing. Now, Angus's mom does not pick up the phone. So technically and legally, Paul Giamatti's character cannot let him go because it's like, you're in my care of the school. Like, I need your parents' permission before you leave. So now she does not pick up the phone call, so he cannot leave. So now it is just him, Paul Giamatti, and Devane Joy Randall chilling on this campus, trying to make the best of it. And through that, they really start to understand each other and learn more about each other. And they start to have this like really beautiful kind of found family relationship. I think like some of the big points is when he takes him to Boston and they go to the museum and they go to the little bookstore. The part at the Christmas party I thought was really beautiful. And also when they're out to dinner and they're trying to get the bananas Foster, but they can't have it because there's alcohol in it. And then they light it on fire themselves. Oh my God. Like this movie is really touching and it's really beautiful. But I would say like one of the best scenes, and it's kind of not talked about, and well, I haven't seen it really talked about, is the scene where he goes to see his dad.
Yeah, that was kind of sad. I was like, wow, you know, because he loves his dad and he remembers his dad when his dad didn't have like the form of dementia that he has. So he has all those memories of his dad, like with like, you know, normal insight.
Yeah. And I think it's just really devastating to see like the person that like you love the most and is like what you consider like your protector and like your father, and just having him not even recognize him, I thought was really devastating. And having him not like remember him, because he's kind of has this moment of like, oh, dad, like, we're going to get you out, like me, you and mom, like we're going to be back together again. And the dad is just kind of talking to him like it's not his son, like he doesn't know who he is.
Yeah, and it's tragic. Like, personal life. Like, my wife went through something like that with her dad, and it was awful to see the memory loss and just like the deterioration. And like, it is a tragic, tragic situation. And in this movie, I was kind of sitting back going, "Ooh, you know, something I can't watch with my wife because that would trigger her."
Absolutely. It is something that is so devastating. I mean, the mind is so powerful, but at the same time is incredibly fragile. And I think we really see that. And I think to watch this child, because he is a child, he's in high school, to watch this child kind of be abandoned and forgotten and isolated from all these like parental and loving figures in his life is really devastating. You see him already get rejected from his mom and like her new husband. You see his father not even remember him. He doesn't have any like real friends that he like can connect to. And the only people that he has is Paul Giamatti, and he keeps trying to run away from him.
Yeah, there's a funny part where the gym's closed off because it's being remodeled and the floor's done, and he can't be in there at all. And he runs and he jumps on this trampoline and like breaks his arm. Like,
and I thought that scene was so funny when they're just screaming in the car. He's like, "What do you think would happen?" He's like, "Drive faster." I thought that was so funny because I think that it shows that like kind of like need for like adolescent like rebellion of like, I know what I'm gonna do and I'm gonna do it and you be damned, and then like does it and then is like, oh my god, you were right, what was I thinking, like now I'm in so much pain.
Yeah, especially like afterwards when the janitor comes in, he goes, someone was in the gym, do you know anything about it? But they all lie. They're like, no, and he goes, oh okay, well you all can clean it up.
And I thought that was so funny, and it was kind of like, because I think for the first time in Angus's life, he kind of had that like camaraderie and that like protection that he was always looking for. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to grow up in extreme wealth where your parents ship you off for 4 years to go to school and like don't really see you. I mean, these are like your formative years.
Yeah, you know, it's your building. It's what, you know, you're bonding with other people, you're building. And when you make friendships and stuff, it's like moving, like when you're a kid and you move to a different neighborhood or a different city or a different state, but you leave all those behind and like all the people that you know. And, you know, it's sad and it's depressing. It's traumatizing because, you know, you had those relationships and you're like, we're going to stay in touch. And you never do because life goes on.
And life goes on and people change. And I think the way that like our lives like move and how we like connect with people and like how like every little thing like affects it, I think is so interesting. This movie obviously was very critically well received. I think it has a 97 still on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, everyone has loved it. This is directed by Alexander Payne. You guys have probably know him from doing like Sideways and The Descendants. So he has worked with Paul Giamatti before. I also think he did the movie Downsizing, but I didn't see that when they shrink Matt Damon. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Who cares? Matt Damon, whatever. But
oh, is that when they're going to a town to live in a town?
Yeah, it's like the small town.
Yeah, and it's to save on like the food and everything
and
like that.
Money and yeah, like yeah.
Oh yeah, I did see it. It was dumb.
Yeah, okay. So bad. But he comes back triumphantly with this film. I wanna talk about right before the Oscars kind of happened, there was this sort of little plagiarism accusation that went after the script of that this movie was based on. So Simon Stevenson had put in a complaint with the Writers Guild of America saying that he has submitted a script that forensically was so similar to the holdovers that he believes that they read it and then just changed some story points of it. I don't know how, I mean, I think the investigation is still going. I don't know how it's shaking out, but I think it's really interesting. And I kind of want to talk to you and talk about with this, the idea of like submitting your work and kind of giving your work to these bigger houses to try to make a script out of. And if you don't copyright it, or what does it take to change something enough to make it your own?
Yeah, there's been like numerous cases of that. Like, wasn't like Harlem Nights?
Yeah, I think that was similar.
Yeah, that Eddie Murphy got sued with that. Yeah. And then what was it? The book, Terry Goodkind. He said that he had shown the man that came out with The Wheel of Time that book series, and he said, oh, it will never do anything. And then he took it and made it for his own. So Terry Goodkind came out with The Seeker. So I don't know if any of this is true. I don't want to get in trouble, but this is the stuff that I've heard over time.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting. So I believe like, okay, so obviously there's something, if you believe in it, it's called the collective unconscious, where this is why like trends happen. And this is why certain things happen, is because you're seeing a shift collectively through people of like what they're gravitating towards, right? So obviously two people can have the same idea, right? That's not uncommon. There's billions of people in the world. Someone is bound to have the same idea. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, 100%.
But at what point can you change something enough to make it your own? Or if you're stealing the base of someone else's idea, was it ever your own? I mean, some people are just more talented and can recognize a good idea and make it something. And does that hold any merit?
Yeah, like we kind of went through something like that a little bit a while back. What was happening, WZ happening, and someone came up with what's happening. And they were like, oh, well, that's ours. And I'm like, well, we were here for the beginning, and where was happening. We do movie reviews. We're nothing like you, you know. And if you're still out there, we're still better than you.
Exactly. And where was happening, not what's happening. Sounds like a boring question. but truly, like, if you look at it, like, what constitutes an original idea, right? Because two people can tell a story about a disillusioned older man and the friendship that he forges and, like, the relationship that he forges, like, with a younger person and how they kind of connect with each other and help each other. I mean, that seems like a pretty universal story to me.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, how many books have you read where you go, oh, wait, this seems just like the other book I read before, and you have to go back and look at the different author, but it came out years later or years before. I mean, yeah, similarities are going to always be there because the world is big, but people's mind and conscience isn't.
It's not. And I mean, one of my favorite examples of this, and you'll see, like, movies, similar movies will come out all the time from different houses. Like
vampires.
But, like, if you look at, like, Contact and Armageddon, that's basically the same movie told in two different ways.
100%.
You have Just Friends and Friends with Benefits. Those are two of the same romantic comedies with different leads. Like, there's so much similarity because there's so many different ideas and there's so many creatives out there. I mean, I don't know if Alexander Payne stole this. If he did steal it, I do think that's kind of bullshit that he didn't give at least writing credit to. It's not that hard to give credit, even if you, like, read a script. It's not hard to give credit.
Yeah, recently Katy Perry got in trouble for taking the Christian rock band's music for, what's her big hit?
She has so many, I don't know.
The one with the lion.
Oh, Roar.
Roar, yes. So the music for that was actually from a Christian rock band, and they had sued and won.
Wow. I mean, and that's the thing. You got to copyright your stuff, people. Like, there are laws like this for a reason. But at the same point, like, it's not that hard, as I was just saying, to give credit. Like, Katy Perry obviously could have given credit. I mean, in music is very different from, like, writing. There are things called, like, sampling and interpolation. And, like, you can manipulate and use and skew parts of other songs to create, like, what you're looking for. That happens literally all the time. But it comes down to credit. Like, you have to give people credit. Like, and it's okay to say that, like, oh, you know what? Like, I had help with this. And that's what I don't understand.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you see a lot of it lately, like, really a lot lately. Blurred Lines just got, a while back, got sued for using, I want to say it was either Bob Marley or someone's music. I mean, so you see it a lot in music and a lot in art. What's the old saying? Like, art repeats itself?
Art does repeat itself. That's why we have trends. That's why we have, like, that's why everything comes full circle. That's why, especially, like, one of the best ways that you can look at this is fashion. Like, all fashion trends will repeat on, like, a 30 to 40 year cycle. That happens. It's okay. Give credit. So if Alexander Payne really did steal this script, that's kind of shitty. But I will say, whatever parts that he took or added, it turned out to be a great movie.
Yeah, I love the bar scene where he gets in trouble with the people playing pool.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, they're going to kick his ass. And he has to go and, like, get saved by the teacher. That was pretty funny.
I thought that was funny, too, because it kind of shows how, like, he kind of has, like, this, like, smart alecky, like, attitude and this kind of, like, wall up a lot of the times. And you can kind of see him always pushing people away because no one's ever really stuck around. And then we see Paul Giamatti sticking around. And then we see Paul Giamatti fighting for him at the end when they want to expel him. And they're like, you can't do this. And Paul Giamatti actually lost his job to save him. I thought that was great.
Yeah, you know, because they were like, whose idea was it? And he was like, you know, thinking for a second, he was like, it's mine. He's like, he did nothing wrong. None of them did anything wrong. This was all my idea. So he totally took it on the chin.
Yeah, he did. And he was doing that because you can tell that, like, he didn't want like, this boy was so lost. He's just trying to find his dad. He's just trying to find his place. Like, he's just trying to carve out this, like, little bit for himself. And Paul Giamatti, I think, initially had a lot of respect for him because he was so smart and he was the only one that was doing well in his class.
Yeah, I remember at the beginning they're talking trash about him, Paul Giamatti, and they're all together talking trash about him. But at the ending, they come back from school and he's there, and Paul Giamatti's leaving. He's talking to the kid, and the other kids like say something about him, and he's like, "No, he was a good teacher."
Yeah, and I think that like kind of shows like. Because no one really respects Paul Giamatti as a teacher, but he's been the teacher there the longest. Like, obviously, he's a good teacher. And, I mean, it's not about, like, pampering and kind of, like, coddling the like, rich, which is what I think happens. And then Paul Giamatti was kind of, like, the resistance against that. Like, he's like, I'm trying to build excellence, and I'm trying to build these boys up, and I'm trying to make them smart and, like, capable. And he does it in a very funny, sarcastic way with them.
Yeah, 100%. And there's one part where Paul Giamatti meets an ex-colleague that went to college with him. What, Princeton, was it? And
Harvard.
Well, it was a very Ivy League school. And I guess he had gotten kicked out. And for wrongful reasons, he got kicked out. But he took one on the chin for someone else. The guy's kind of judging him a little bit. And he's like, oh, you know, I do this and this. And then Dominic Sessa sticks up for him and says, oh, well, he's writing a book. And he's doing and like he totally like makes up this story to help out. Him, and you know, it was kind of cool.
It was cool, and you kind of see that like that bond that they've been creating and this like kind of protection that they have for each other and this kind of like admiration that they have. I mean, Paul Giamatti realistically is like probably outside of his dad, who he has like memories of, is like the most stable parental figure like in his life. And I mean, to have him really like, I think the moment is so beautiful. It's between him and Devane Joy Randall when he's kind of like waiting for his fate, and she's kind of just like sitting next to him, and they kind of just like hold hands, and she's just there to comfort him. It's like, that's all he needs is like comfort and like a parent and like love. And I think this story of like how when we're broken, we kind of find these other broken people and we kind of help one another put ourselves back together. And I think that was what I really took away from this story. And that's why I think I liked it so much.
Yeah, when she did that, it reminded me of, like, the fact that her son died and she wasn't there for that.
Yeah.
And I think that was, like, her way of, you know, like being there for him. Like, it was, like, her, like, come around, you know?
Of course.
Her biggest regret was that she was always there for her son, and they were best friends besides parent and mother, you know, son and mother. And, like, she talks about how she wishes she was there at the end with him to say goodbye. So when this is about to be this kid's goodbye, she's there with him.
And it is a really beautiful moment. And I think that moment of like, especially like, I mean, I don't have a kid. I don't have any kids in the military or anything. I've never lost a child. But I think too, when you can say goodbye to someone, there is a lot of that closure. But when it happens so far away and you're just hearing about it, and that I feel would be incredibly isolating, because like, in the scariest moment of like a person's life, like they want to be surrounded by like the ones that they love. And I don't think you get that in the army. And I think that was implied here. And I think that guilt and that kind of like regret that she holds on, she really does. I think it's very cathartic for everyone.
Yeah. So I'm going to share something that's very sad and depressing for me. My junior year, I was going to school and I was coming back from lunch, and my friend came up and said, "Your mom was put into an ambulance." And I was like, oh. But my mom was sickly. She was always sickly, and she always had to go to the hospital for something. So after school, I was walking up, and so there was a bunch of people in front of my house, and I was told that my mother had died. I was not there for her. I totally was like a basket case afterwards, because, you know, I never got to say goodbye. Like, my dad, he was at the hospital. They didn't tell him she had passed. He went looking for her, found her in the room with a blanket over her, and like just lost it and came home. So being there for the person you love is probably one of the most important things in life, and not being able to do that for like me and my dad was just like devastating.
Ben, I'm so sorry. That is absolutely devastating. And kind of to like have that sort of like firsthand experiences, I don't know, like, did you connect with certain parts of this film because of that?
Well, so like when this happened, I left. I went to Lynn Woods and hung out in Lynn Woods for hours and got drunk off my butt. when I came home, my dad had gone out with my aunt Cindy. He went to sleep over there, so he wasn't alone. And I just remember sitting in the rocking chair, my mom's rocking chair, and I looked over and she had a pack of cigarettes. She used to always smoke like Old Gold. And I just remember smoking these cigarettes, and I didn't smoke cigarettes. So I was coughing and hacking on it and crying. And it was just an awful, awful feeling for me because, like, the sense of loss and, like, knowing that I would never see this person again, who was, like, my life. I could see the emotional connection between me and the lunch maid because, you know, it's someone you love and, you know, you always think they're going to be there. And when they're gone, it's just, like, it's heart-wrenching.
It is. It is, especially, I mean, a child never expects to lose a parent. So I can't even, especially so suddenly, too, Ben, I am... That is devastating.
Oh yeah, it was a long, long time ago, but you know, pain never goes away because it's your family, you know.
Of course, of course. And I mean, you'll, like you said, like, this was the most important person in your life, and I mean, she's still with you every day.
Oh, 100%. You know, and I have fond memories of me and my mom watching wrestling and her putting me in a headlock and like joking with me, and like we were really close. Like she was like the person, like I'd come home after being drunk to come watch like the Dukes of Hazzard with. I'd leave a party and walk trashed all the way home to sit with my mother and watch the Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh my God. That's like a nice memory though.
Oh, 100%. That's what I'm saying. I could relate to the loss of this woman because like, and I hope it never happens to anybody out there. If you're really close with your parents or your siblings, I hope to God that they're there for a long time and you can be with them because like, it's just the worst feeling to know that you were shorted. That's how you feel. You feel you were shorted.
Yeah. And I think too, like to not have that kind of like closure, that kind of like moment of like catharsis also can be very like, yeah, it can be incredibly difficult and painful.
Yeah. So like I said, this movie's really, really good. Like it's got a lot of parts to it where you're like, oh my God, you know, and like, you know, I watched it and it was rough. I couldn't watch it with my wife because like I said, with her dad. So the part with that kid's dad, that might be like too much for her. So, but yeah, it is a great movie. Don't let me like my, what I was sharing that because it's a personal thing. And I thought, you know, it fit with the movie. So
it does fit with the movie.
So don't like not see this movie. It's a beautiful movie.
Oh, see this movie because we're talking a lot. We're pulling out a lot of the sad points because those are some of the major story points of it. But this movie is incredibly funny. Like you will laugh.
Oh yeah. There was so many parts in this where you crack up laughing. Like I was talking about the bar scene and then there's a part when they're eating dinner and they're all together and he pulls out the whiskey and, you know, and like, it's really funny.
It's really funny. Like the fact that he has like 45 copies of the same book that he like gives out as like gifts every year. And like, I don't know, Paul Giamatti is very funny. His little one-liners are very funny.
Yeah. 100%. Like I said, what's the part when he's dropping her off at her sister's house in Cambridge?
Yeah.
And or
Dorchester. Like a Roxbury, something
Roxbury.
Like that.
It was like, yeah, someplace I've been to in my travels. It was funny. Like he makes a couple of comments to her and she makes a couple of smart comments back. But at the end, like, you know, they're going to miss each other.
They're going to miss each other. And then that's actually a beautiful moment. She goes to see her sister because her sister's pregnant. And you kind of see them like setting up like the baby room together. And you kind of see this like sadness in her eyes of like, oh, like you're starting your life with your son and I've just lost my son. And it was this really beautiful moment of like how like family does come together and like sisters are like connected. And I thought it was phenomenally done.
Yeah. And didn't she like name the baby, a part of the baby's name, like the middle name after him?
Yeah. So it was really beautiful. Absolutely watch this movie. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Supporting Actress, which it won, Best Actor, which it did not win. But it got a lot of praise. It's a phenomenal movie. I don't know if it's the best movie to watch now in the springtime. To me, it is set around Christmas time, so it's much more like wintery vibes.
Yeah, Thanksgiving break.
Yeah, Christmas. So I think watching it in that time, I know it's a long time to wait, but I think it would have more of an impact if you're a first-time viewer. But absolutely watch it. I know it's playing for free on Peacock, I believe.
Yes, on Peacock.
So if you guys have that, watch that. Obviously, if you want to rent it, though, rent it. It's absolutely worth the money. I don't think... I would pay. I mean, I paid to see this movie in theater, so I would obviously pay for it again.
Yeah, I bought it, so...
Yeah, because it's so good.
Yeah, 100%. It was worth it.
It was absolutely worth it. It really does feel very New England. It has a lot of New England vibes. It was funny. A lot of movies were set in Boston this year. This being one of them, American Fiction, which was also nominated for An Academy Award was also set like in the Boston area. I just saw a rom-com, Anyone But You, that was also set in Boston for a little bit. Like, Boston's kind of everywhere right now.
Well, I do know that, like, for a little bit, Boston was, like, was a really hard place to come to because of how much they charged. But they had dropped all that, like, charging and everything to get the movie companies to come here. You know, it was after, what was that, Black Friday?
Yeah.
So, like, Black Friday was filmed here. There was a bunch of movies that were filmed. Black Friday was actually filmed in Lynn at the old Hawthorne restaurant in downtown Lynn. It was one of the scenes. So, for me, I was like, oh, hometown pride. But, yeah, so, like, Boston has made it so, like, it's more, like, substantial for companies to come here and film here now.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, I love it. I love seeing it. Absolutely watch this movie. It's so good. Everything about this movie is heartwarming and amazing, even though it's also emotionally devastating.
Yes, it's the best of both worlds.
It really is. Absolutely watch it. I can't praise this movie enough. This has been a great year for movies, and I think the Academy Awards really showcase that. There are so many great performances, so many great films. We're going to talk about a few more that have really done well this season. So catch us next time on What's Happening.